This is Voices of Our World. I'm your host, Eileen Bott. Once upon an enemy's list, President Richard Milhouse Nixon had the FBI bug, wiretap, and generally spy on John Lennon. Lennon was singing, writing, demonstrating, and talking to his generation and the media against the unpopular Vietnam War. As innocuous as that really was, it was seen by the Nixon White House, still mired in Nam, as a threat to their policies. As we learn more about the domestic spying being conducted now by the National Security Agency at the behest of the Bush White House, we're finding out what sort of American citizen is being scrutinized. One group of folks listened in on were a committee of Quaker parents and grandparents called Pledge of Resistance, Baltimore, who held a meeting to discuss ways to get the U.S. military to stop recruiting efforts on school grounds in their community. Quakers are pacifists. Therefore, this little group is considered a threat. But when America started to bristle over domestic spying, the Bush White House pulled out the fear card once again. Under the mantra of, I have to protect the American people, the president and his appointees can chisel away at our freedoms, our privacy, all the privileges that make us a democratic nation. How do you teach or transplant democratic values? It would make sense that cultural, religious, and historic differences would be taken into account when introducing the notion of government of, by, and for the people. Can the United States spread democracy ordering, do as I say, not as I do? Democracy imposed wouldn't be, well, democracy. As Heather Hilbert pointed out in an essay published in Washington Monthly, if the theory of democracy spillover held up, then Vietnam and Laos would have followed Cambodia's lead. Macedonia and Serbia would have copied Bosnia and Kosovo, and so on. Democracy usually best comes about when the people of a given nation get sick and tired of tyranny, just as when the United States of America was born. Following its first ever presidential election, November 9, 2005, Egypt held a parliamentary election, giving legitimacy to emerging independent parties. Kathy Golden talks with Maryknoll Father Doug May, who has lived and worked in the Middle East and Egypt for nearly 20 years.
You just had elections over in Egypt, Doug. Tell me about bringing democracy to the Middle East.
Obviously, not being an Egyptian citizen, I didn't vote. But just my usual network of taxicab drivers and Boab's door people and Egyptian friends, I had this sense from them that it was kind of, I don't want to use the word joke exactly, but it didn't mean a lot to them. There were placards and banners all over the place. But I heard from one cab driver, for instance, the National Party give 50 to 100 pounds to anybody who will go and vote for them. And then somebody else mentioned that the security police were letting out thugs from jail to go and break up demonstrations, mainly among the Islamic Brotherhood that were demonstrating. And the Brotherhood, as you know, possibly got a fairly decent increase in their representation, but they did it as independents. They didn't do it as a party. And it gets down to a general Middle East concept that I've acquired since I first went to the Emirates to work as a hotel manager back in 1977, where you have sultans, you have rulers, and they're all linked to tribes and families. The Middle East, the people basically want a leader or leadership that guarantees a secure and better than subsistence living lifestyle. They're not too concerned whether he's a dictator or a king or a tribal chieftain or a prime minister or a president. All they want is someone who's going to run the country and help them live a better life. So for them, democracy is not exactly a value. It's definitely not an end, but possibly a means to an end. I think even in Iraq, I mean, people are excited about having a say about their government. And I think in Egypt, they would love to have a say. But I don't think they honestly believe after year after year, decade after decade, that there is such a thing as a government by the people. And I don't even think they really want it. I don't think they want the responsibility of government. So maybe through a long process of education and formation of the people from the home and the school right on up, something like that could be developed. But they're very much, let somebody else worry about it. And then this election, like every election that I've been to or been, you know, present in Egypt during the elective process for parliament, I've always seen al-Islam huwa al-hal, which is Islam, it is the solution. And there's so much frustration with the way things are being run in Egypt. A Jesuit priest 20-some years ago made the comment that if Egypt wasn't so tired and people weren't just trying to stay alive and live a subsistence lifestyle, they'd probably have another revolution. That I think if people were given the total right to democratically elect a government because they're so frustrated with what they've had in the past, the chances are they would elect an Islamic government, which would eventually evolve into an Islamic republic, which would eventually evolve into an Islamic dictatorship or totalitarian government. So I don't think the United States wants democracy to work that way. I think there was an election years back in Algeria where the Islamic parties got the upper hand and we wanted it voided. And I think in Egypt, if we were to have a totally democratic government that went Islamic and went against the policies of the United States, we wouldn't be happy with that. We'd much rather have a dictatorship again. And in many ways, while Mubarak is a very benevolent person, he is somewhat of a benevolent dictator that kind of has been in government for over 24 years now, basically because the United States supports him and people are afraid of anything different.
If you're just joining us, this is Voices of Our World, and we're talking with Mary Knoll's representative in Egypt, Father Doug May.
Well, that begs the question, this administration, as it cascades through its laundry list of reasons for war, they're down to the fact that they're trying to change or set up democracies in the Middle East. Can that work culturally? Can you presume to enforce a government format that people don't necessarily gravitate to?
Well, for one thing, I'm not even sure if we're gravitating to democracy and democratic
elections
here in the United States.
But we'd like to see it somewhere else.
I mean, we'd like to think so. But it demands an educated electorate. It demands a critical thinking populace. And I don't particularly think you have either in most places in the Middle East. That's not to put them down. It's just a state of fact. You know, in villages in Upper Egypt, you have the Umdah, and the Umdah is like a mayor, but it's almost like an inherited position, and you have three or four elders. And if it is an elected position, it's the elder saying, okay, we're going to choose you to be the next mayor. Yeah. And when I was in the Emirates, I mean, it was the tribal chieftain. And if you, at least maybe things have changed a little bit, but when I was in the United Arab Emirates 25, 30 years ago, I mean, there were these enclaves of what's Abu Dhabi and what's Sharjah and what's Dubai, according to what local tribal chieftains, how they aligned or were related to the major one, which was, you know, Sheikh Sultan in Sharjah or Sheikh Zayed in Abu Dhabi or Sheikh Rashid in Dubai. And everybody seemed totally happy with or content with that because that's what they've always known. Mm-hmm. So democracy is more of a European value that with preparation, with formation, hey, it could work, but it hasn't always worked in Africa where you've tried to have democracy since the 1960s when colonial rule ended in most countries in Africa, and you've ended up with all sorts of dictatorships and tyrants and stuff like that in these various countries. So, you know, it just doesn't always work outside of the Western mindset.
Under Islamic regimes, is it more appropriate even or to have this blending, this intrusion of religion blended with government?
I always say, you know, if the United States in the constitutional sense ever became a Christian country, I'd be the first one to leave it. And Egypt is a de facto secular government with an enormous amount of Islamic influence. And it's become more so over the years. When I was coming home this year, a couple of weeks ago, I was riding home on Air Egypt, which now doesn't have stewardesses, at least not on my flight. It didn't have alcoholic beverages. And I was sitting next to an Egyptian who was a Canadian director film producer. And we were talking about the old days of the films of the 1950s and 60s during Nasser's time when Egypt was very much a secular society like Iraq was during the earlier days of Saddam. Mm-hmm. And there was a lot of religious tolerance, and at least in the Western sense of there was much more free movement and free action. Women weren't afraid to go to a beach with a bathing suit, or a man afraid to have an alcoholic drink in public or something like that. Nowadays, all that's frowned upon. Mm-hmm. But Islamic society, you also have to distinguish between this whole idea, which I'm not afraid of a fundamentalist government, which basically says, okay, it's going to be an Islamic environment, but we're going to have tolerance for various other people who are different from us, whether they be Christian or Jewish or whatever, and a fanatical Islamic government, which basically says no one's going to live in this country except as a Muslim, whether they be Muslim, Jewish, or Christian. Mm-hmm. And so when we have to fast, you have to fast. And when we have to do whatever, you have to do it too. And so, you know, I think what we have to do is distinguish between what is fanatical Islam and what is basic nuts and bolts, meat and potatoes Islam, like meat and potatoes, nuts and bolts Christianity would be in this country. I don't believe in any mingling or merging of church and state, or mosque and state in this case.
Yeah.
And religion is part of culture. And we had an old Egyptian Dominican priest who would have been celebrating his 100th anniversary of his birth this year. He died about 10 years ago. But he used to constantly say that culture without religion is superficial, and religion without culture is fanatical. And there has to be that dialogue between mm-hmm. kind of a culture which is secular and old, and religion which is more internal and spiritual. And those two have to be in dialogue and maybe even in tension with each other. And when religion tries to squash culture, I think then you get these theocracies that don't have any tolerance for people of different modes of life.
Yeah. And actually, I guess 85% of the vote counted. Alawi's not doing that well, not as well as was predicted. And so Iraq may end up being a theocracy. It could happen.
Well, I think Iraq very easily could be. And I think if you had totally democratic elections in Egypt, I think Egypt could very easily become one as well. And then you're going to deal with, you know, American interests and Israel surrounded by Islamic regimes, which might not be as sympathetic towards United States foreign policy and the existence of Israel in their midst.
Can democracy be imposed by an occupying power? Email us at radio@marynoll.org or go to our website, www.voicesofourworld.org. Just click on Contact Us or call us at 877-MARY-KNOLL. That's 877-MARYKNOLL. Well, that's all for this week, and thanks for listening. Peter Arnett and Mary Knoll Father Doug May are just two of the voices of our world. This week's show was produced by Kathy Golden, and I'm your host, Eileen Bott. Feet to the Fire, edited by Christina Borgeson, is a Prometheus book. You heard music today by Annie DeFranco and The Damned. Our website is www.voicesofourworld.org, where you can listen, learn more about today's guests and topics, answer our weekly question, or subscribe to our podcast. Please go to www.voicesofourworld.org. To learn more about Mary Knoll or to try Mary Knoll magazine in English or Spanish, call 877-MARY-KNOLL. That's 877-MARYKNOLL. And please join us next time for more Voices of Our World.